Mayor Pro Tem Jimenez.
Present.
Councilmember Belton.
Here.
Councilmember Ceja. Councilmember Duval.
Here.
Councilmember Garcia.
Here.
Councilmember Pettit.
Present.
Great. It doesn't look like we have any new employee introductions, so we're going to go ahead and move on to number three, receive presentation by Y.
Are we going to excuse Councilman?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. I'll entertain a motion to excuse Councilman Ceja.
I move to excuse Councilman Ceja.
I'll second.
Great. So we have a motion on the floor to excuse Councilman Ceja from tonight's meeting by Councilwoman Duval, seconded by Councilman Garcia. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great, motion passes. Excellent. We'll move on to number three. Receive presentation by Yakima Valley Conference of Governance on the proposed housing action plan. Our city manager,
sure,
or our interim.
Yeah, that's fine. So as we know, Yakima Valley Conference of Governments has been working on a housing action plan that goes along with our community outreach that they did for mm-hmm. us. And so Byron is here tonight and Vicki are here tonight to give us a presentation on that update and where we're at with that right now.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay. Hey. Where do you want us? Okay. I just want to say thank you for having us back again so that we can give you an update. It's been a little bit of time and we are talking about the housing action plan, but I'll be here for questions if you have any other questions on what we're working on. But tonight I want to introduce Byron, who's new at YVCOG, but is an expert. So I wanted you to know you're getting a really high quality guy here. So he graduated University of Wisconsin with degrees in natural resources management, land use planning, philosophy, environmental ethics, with a minor in geographical information systems and spatial analysis.
Wow.
16 years of planning experience all around the Yakima Valley. So he is... he's been working on this data part and kind of just the beginning of this process for us. He's going to go into that in quite a bit of detail tonight, which is great. But what I wanted to tell you is that I really want to hear from you individually as we go through this process and what your priorities are as council members who've been here for a long time. And I know you have ideas on housing in the community and what's important to you. So we'll be scheduling time with you individually so that we can get some of your feedback as we go through. Because what's going to happen is this is just we're doing the analysis. We're going to be coming up with a needs assessment. Then we'll go into the part where we do the actual planning part. And that's where Byron's the expert. I'm not going to be doing that, but he and I both will be listening to what you think is important in that process. You'll be given a list of, many options to choose from for different housing policies for you to think about. And that'll take a little bit of time to go through all of that. But Byron is going to go through it in detail tonight. And then I'm just going to be here in case you have any questions. Okay.
Thank you.
So Vicki, are you going to wait for us to finish with our retreat, or it doesn't matter? Because we're going to have a council retreat, not this weekend, but the following week.
Right.
So I was wondering, are you going to meet with us before the retreat or after the retreat?
Good question. Yeah. I don't know if we could try to do it before.
Well,
I don't know
not
what
really,
your schedules are. Well, I think it might be good to be informed on what your priorities are before that. So maybe we can work out scheduling and what my schedule looks like. And Byron is a very busy guy. He's challenging too. But if we can possibly do it, I think the sooner the better, especially because of the retreat. That's a good point.
Well, okay. Part of the retreat, though, is actually setting some priorities. So,
yeah.
So,
it may fit better after the retreat.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we can talk about the problems and then come out of that with.
Yeah. Well, I think if we talk to you about it and make for a council retreat, I like the idea of doing it before.
Okay. And I think we can be flexible on it too. Okay. So I'm happy to do that and kind of flesh out what it is you are thinking for your priorities. And I know that Byron is going to talk a little bit more, and I think it'll come together as we go through this process, exactly what we mean. Because policies in Olympia, they have a lot of new ideas happening all over the state and all over the country. And so, stealing best practices from other places and coming up with ways that your code is really nice for developers and, you know, whatever your priorities look like. So
well, we don't steal, we just borrow.
I borrow. Yeah. Let me just say, let me change that.
The police officers here, we don't steal, we just borrow permanently.
Yeah, we'll appropriate good ideas. How about that? I love it. Okay, Byron, it's all you.
Thank you, Council. Good evening. My name is Byron Gums, as Vicki mentioned. I'm the planner with YV COG. The housing action plan, what we're going to be going through today is kind of an analysis, quick look at some of the data we've collected. It's primarily come from the US Census, but we've used numbers from the Office of Financial Management, some other sources that we're just compiling together. And what we're trying to do is create a snapshot with this housing needs assessment, which will then guide and educate us on creating a housing action plan. Mm-hmm. So the needs assessment, we look at such things as your community demographics, the existing housing stock, workforce profiles as far as who's coming into the community in the morning, who's leaving the community in the morning, trying to break those numbers down to get an idea of what's actually happening in the community, where are people living. We're looking at a number of things, but I'll get into my slides here. Kind of, I go off track if I don't follow along here, so I want to move my things along here. So, as part of the housing needs assessment, one of the things we'll also be doing is taking a look at your existing development regulations, taking a look at your existing housing policies, so your comprehensive plan, your zoning ordinance, things of those natures, where you'll be able to come up with plans and identify where you may have opportunities to increase housing for the demographics of your community that need it most, such as, I'm sure you've heard of mother-in-law apartments or accessory dwelling units, allowing cottage style development where it's similar to condo ownership, where it's a single ownership that may own the land, but individuals own the structures, the homes, the housing units themselves. Let's see. And then can we go to the next slide, please? So as I briefly touched on, step one is this housing needs assessment, and that's where we are right now. Step two is the housing action plan. A big component of that is going to be community outreach. Vicki mentioned that we'll be reaching out to council individually to get an idea of your take on what the community needs, because you are representatives of your community, as well as outreach to other organizations such as religious groups, the developers that work here in the community, those people that are experiencing and are involved in it in one side or the other. So the needs assessment itself, you have a community profile, workforce profile, housing inventory, a gap analysis, and a land capacity analysis. Those are the five main components of the housing needs assessment. And I'll show some data for all of those. So community profile, I mentioned that. The workforce profile, we actually have a program that we started to use. And I'm not sure if you have worked with Jeff Watson. He's one of our planners at YV COG, but he's shifted more to the transportation planning side of things. And they have this amazing program called Streetlight, where they can, it's really interesting and scary at the same time, because it uses cellular data. So the pings on your cell phone off the different towers to track where people are going. And it's not to the individual specific thing. Like you couldn't be like, oh, Byron left at 7:55 this morning and stopped at the gas station. It's not like that, but it's more generic as far as leaving this zip code, ending up in this zip code at certain time frames. So we're going to be using that sort of information to develop a workforce profile. We'll be using that to figure out if there's a need. So the folks that are commuting into Toppenish in the mornings, the question is raised, why aren't they living in Toppenish if they're working in Toppenish? So it's looking to see if there's a need that could be met through this housing inventory, pretty straightforward. How many bedrooms per home? How many different types of ownership versus rentals, those sorts of things. A gap analysis is looking at the data and seeing where there's a deficiency in maybe the number of housing units, and I'll go through an example of that. And then a land capacity analysis is something that you may or may not be familiar with, but it's something that it's a closer look at your community and looking at the individual parcels and the zoning to see how many lots within your commercial zone have been developed, how many are vacant, how many partially developed, how much room do you have to grow basically within your community, and how much are you going to need into the future? Next slide, please. So this is the US Census information on Toppenish's population from 2010 to 2020. This slide and the next slide, it was brought to my attention that the numbers are different, and I'd like to take an opportunity to explain that. So the census, if we look here, if you look at 2010, it shows 8,820. And if you look at 2020, it shows 8,872. So when we're looking at trends, you basically look at population change over a certain time frame and you get an average. So looking at these numbers, it would show that only 52 more people lived here between 2010 and 2020, which I don't think is necessarily accurate or should be reflected in your needs assessment. So if we could go to the next slide. What I did is take numbers from the Office of Financial Management in Yakima County when they did an urban growth area analysis a handful of years ago. They had a population projection that had these numbers. So I used the previous population, and this is your forecasted population to come up with your gap analysis for the housing needs. The next slide here, this is where we start getting into the data. This is a breakdown of the population of Toppenish by age. Here it has the specific numbers. The next slide is the same information, but portrayed as a percentage. You can see that you have a young population in Toppenish. I have a slide that has some takeaways on it, but over half your population is under 30 years of age. I think 38% or so of households have children under the age of 18. So you have a very young community, and if people grow up and they wanna stay in Toppenish, that's gonna increase the need for housing so people can stay here and live here and be contributing members. This is just showing the number of households based on the US Census, and it breaks it down into those who rent versus those who own. So about a third of Toppenish are living in places that they're renting, two thirds they own their house. This is a breakdown of the housing size. So the number of people per household, you can see that the vast majority of people within Toppenish live in a larger household, four or more people living in an individual or separate unique home. And that's the information you look at when you're thinking of what sort of strategies can we come up with to address housing, because if you have a nuclear family that's a little bit larger of a family, a typical three-bedroom home probably isn't going to be large enough. So how do you incentivize or how do you encourage developers to look at creating larger homes so you don't get overcrowding in homes and you have generational families within one roof? This is a breakdown. It's those same numbers, but own versus rent. The yellow is ownership, the orange is renting, and you can kind of start to see that the larger the household, the more likely it is that they're renting rather than being able to own a home.
Wow.
Next slide is the number of bedrooms per home. This is just something straight from the census. So you can see that by and large, the most common house is a three-bedroom house in your community. And going back to that last slide, you know, you have those larger families compared with this, you know, the rubber meets the road.
When you go back to the last one, the household size, even when you look at the four or more person household, more people own than the rent.
Yes.
So to me, it's like, even down here, it just shows that if it's bigger, they're owning their own home.
Right.
So I still think, don't we need to be careful when we're talking about how we're going to build? Because we're going to talk about it. Are we going to build for renting or are we going to build owning?
Exactly.
That's going to be the other issue.
Absolutely.
Okay, but go on. I just...
100%, you were spot on. And that's where it's going to be important to follow up with meetings when we start looking at the policies that are in your comprehensive plan for your housing element, looking at the development regulations, identifying the need. So it may be that the market wants more rentals than ownership. So how do we facilitate a developer coming in and building rental units rather than building a subdivision filled with three bedroom, two bathroom homes? How do we educate those that may be developing, saying that, hey, there is this need. So we can plan for that and have outreach centered around that. So the following slide here, as I mentioned, I had a slide of initial takeaways. So your average household size is 3.61 people. That's just population divided by housing units. Two-thirds of housing units are owner-occupied. So is there a need for more rentals? And that's one of the things we need community outreach and see what the citizens of Toppenish are wanting. 36% of households have children under 18, 54. So just to reiterate, you have a very young population and there's opportunity to keep your population here and provide those ownership opportunities, provide workforce opportunities. There's a lot that can be generated from all these numbers. So the gap analysis, there's several different types of gap analysis. This example is just housing. So it's a lot of math, simple math. Looking at your projected population for the year 2040, looking at your estimated current population. So it's estimated that you'll have 1,100 new residents in Toppenish in the next 20 years-ish. Mm-hmm. So you break that number down by the average household size and you come up with the number of homes that are needed over the next 20 years.
So our need is the same as Grandview's need?
No.
Because our stuff says Grandview, yours says Toppenish.
That was a typo on mine.
Oh, so the other slides that also say Grandview, it was just you never took off Grandview's.
Yep. Yeah, because I presented the same kind of data, but it was Grandview's data. And when I was creating this presentation, I went through and I didn't see it on a couple of slides.
So the actual numbers are Toppenish numbers?
Yes.
Grandview numbers. I just
want to
make sure.
Yes.
Big difference.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that you caught that or whoever caught that.
Yes, it's
appreciated. Mm-hmm. I was focused on the numbers more.
Yeah.
So 300 homes within the next 20 years. Going on to the next slide. So the census data shows that 56 housing units were built between 2010 and 2020. So that's an average of 5.6 homes per year. So you take that over 20 years and it's 112. So with the previous rate of development versus the rate of population growth, there's going to be 188, I say homes, but housing units that'll be needed. And so the bottom line is housing and creation of housing is not projected to keep up with housing demand.
Right.
So I need to look in and touch bases with the building division, trying to get today's information on number of building permits that have been issued. And all of those numbers will be in the final housing needs assessment. But I didn't have that information as I was putting this together.
So then are you also taking into account the fact that we're on the Yakima Indian Reservation and there are lots that are only the tribes, they're not ours and they're not the cities and the city's never gonna get them. So are those taken out of the equation or how does that work?
It's simply census numbers. So I would imagine that the census would take those into consideration. I don't know if the US Census does not count. I'm not sure. But I would imagine that they do. And so it's strictly by the number of houses, number of people.
So to your point, when you're thinking about needing 188 and you're thinking about how many parcels there are, you may want to talk about density when you talk about what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes it challenging.
Yeah. I just want to make sure everybody remembers that and what kind of lifestyle you're going to want for the community when you start doing the density part.
And there's opportunities to think outside of the box. I know right now Tyatin is updating their comprehensive plan and zoning regulations to allow single family residences in their commercial zones above retail. So things like that, where historically speaking, it may be only businesses are allowed in the commercial zone, or there. I know Sunnyside allows homes in their central business district core, but you have to go through a conditional use permit, which means that every time somebody wants to build a home, they need to go in front of the planning commission or city council and get approval for that. So it may be an opportunity to streamline things, saying, no, it's a lower level of review so we can fit in housing where we have the land available for it, where we get more of mixed use. So there's a lot of different means to hopefully reach an end that provides housing for everyone. The next slide, this is the screenshot of the data from that streetlight program I mentioned. So this is it's kind of interesting to look at. The way that the computer program subscription works is it's for our area, so it only shows Yakima County, the individual places. Otherwise, just those things kind of going off the edge of the map. But the taller the bar, I guess, is the greater the population. So you can see that when people leave in the morning, the majority go to Yakima and Zilla, Wapato, and this doesn't take out anybody that may be going for a doctor's appointment or anything like this. This is just number of cars on the road going that direction. The next slide is those coming into Toppenish. So you can see that Yakima once again is at the top, and then Zilla and Wapato, and it's very interesting. There's opportunities within this program to break down the demographics even more. So it can be some census-based things, but I think it's the zip code census or the census blocks. So you can start to break down people's income levels and education and those sorts of things. Next slide is the median household income. On the far right is the median across everything. The one on the far left is owner occupied versus, and in the middle, of course, is renter occupied. And for the analysis that we use the median income. I just wanted to illustrate that there is separation between the three. Next slide is the breakdown of household incomes, just the different ranges. So you can see 720 households within the community have an income between $50,000 and $75,000. So a lot of the numbers that you see as far as income goes, the magic ratio for spending money on housing is 30%. So a lot of times when I'll be going through the next few slides, you'll see a breakdown of those that are income groups, and then it'll break down those that are spending more than 30% on housing and then more than 50% on housing. And this is just a percentage that I broke down. And that the way that the percentages are broken down, so it may be a little bit more plain English, is that if you're making less than 80% of the median income, it's considered low income. And then 30 to 50% is very low income, and less than 30% is extremely low income. Mm-hmm. So you have, I think it's 53% or so of households and considered low income household. So the trend that we've been seeing across the community and probably across the nation is the lower income households are spending more of their take-home income on housing. So it ends up being a precarious situation for them where they're one car breakdown away or a flat tire away from having to juggle other payments and things like that. And it really isn't healthy on many levels. This slide is just the distribution. I went through that breakdown a little bit, and this just shows top to bottom, the breakdown, renters, owners, and then a combination of both of people that are making those incomes and where they fall. This is a graph. I took this from the Washington State Housing Finance Commission. They do this county by county. They don't get any more narrow on their focus. And essentially, it's where they would step in and help with rental assistance, first-time home buyers assistance, those sorts of things. And they have certain programs that they base your income level on. So for the number of household, the top table is what that income would be if you were a four-person household making 70% of the median Yakima County wage, you'd be making $49,420 a year. And then this bottom table is where you fall in that percentage on the left. And then the numbers as you go across, that's the cost of 30% of your take-home pay. Mm-hmm. So if you're at that 70% and you needed a three-bedroom home, if you're spending more than $1,285, you're spending more than 30% on your income on housing. Mm-hmm. These are screen captures from Zillow, just showing the massive rise in home values.
That blew me away.
I can't imagine.
I've seen some of the homes.
21% raise in the last year.
In the last year.
And then if you look at the one on the right, it's, you know, the last 8-10 years or so. But back in 2014, mm-hmm. I think when I did the little slider thing, it was like 105, 115, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something like that. And to go to $257,000.
In Toppenish.
Which are going to be sunk
in Toppenish. Yeah. With our population.
Yeah.
With our income level.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
well, that can be argued.
And then this is census data. This is what they show as the average rent over the last 10 years. I don't know anybody that can find a place for $740 a month, this is the median. So it could be mom and dad renting the place out for $300 and then somebody renting a place for $2,000 in the countryside. I mean, I don't know what it all is, but this is their reporting median rent.
Wow.
for Toppenish. This is where I, as I mentioned, I start to break down the cost-burdened households based on housing. So this is where somebody's making less than 30% of the average median income. And I put that number in the parentheses of what that is for Toppenish. So somebody making less than $16,000 a year. The way that the census broke it out, there's 330 total households that are within this salary range, if you will, take family income. And of those, the renters and owners and then renters broken apart separately. The yellow is where the cost burden is greater than 30% of their take home pay. The orange is greater than 50%. And the 50%, so the orange would fit inside the yellow. So it's they're not individual, it's built on top of. So somebody that's paying more than 50% is paying more than 30%. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to explain why it's set up side by side like that. This one's the very low income, 30 to 26.5. You can see there's quite a number of households that are cost burdened. And as was mentioned, supply and demand. So how do you increase that supply to lower the demand and lower pricing? So ideally everyone can live within their means.
Could I ask council, do you get a sense that you have a lot of retired seniors in homes that have been here a long time or not really in your neighborhoods? Or?
I see more generational ones in mine.
Depends on the area, of course, and city like most, but we have some areas in town that have a very high retirement rate and others that almost zero.
When I was looking at the income level, I was thinking of retirees.
Yeah. Fixed income. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. I just was curious.
In the census data, there's thousands of tables and things you can dig into, but there is one where it breaks down housing costs as a percentage of income with the housing that there is a mortgage and those without a mortgage. So you can look and see if the house is paid off, because housing costs isn't just mortgage, it's your property taxes, it's your utility bills, all of those things are lumped together. We're at 50 to 80%. So this is the low income, just going through those numbers. And then as you get to the higher levels of income, you notice that the renters just find another place to rent.
Yeah.
And they don't get that cost burden. And then if you want to just go to the next one, this is just a quick breakdown I did of percentages. So 89% of your extremely low income households are cost burdened with housing. And you can see the more money you make, the less housing is going to impact your ability to live life. But long story short, with the housing action plan is looking at the community and trying to find a way for everybody's housing needs to be met where it can be at that 30% range. Continuing data, so our next steps, continuing data collection, fun and analysis, finalizing the housing needs assessment. As Vicki mentioned, community outreach, reaching out to council individually to get feedback from what your constituents are telling you, reaching out to various organizations within the community. So we need their input. We want their input to guide what we're going to be doing and where we're going to put the emphasis on So when it comes time to update your comprehensive plan in a couple of years, the findings that come out of this will be used to update the housing elements and likewise the zoning ordinance. So if there is something like where we're allowing increased densities in certain zoning districts or allowing more than one home on a lot, those things will be put into your zoning ordinance. So moving down the road, it's easier for people to have their housing needs met. Any questions for me? Thank you for your time. It's a process and we're moving through it. Mm-hmm. I have my business cards here that I'll hand out. So if anybody wants to reach out directly, more than happy.
Thank you. Thank you,
Vicki. Thank you. So, and we know you don't have to stick around because I know you guys are busy.
Yeah. So if there isn't any other questions for them, then we'll move on to lodging tax and tourism committees with our interim city manager.
Thank you. So tonight, we're going to revisit a 31-year-old council decision. Mm-hmm. Entered into our new normal, and things are starting to happen. People are going out, they're traveling, they're doing things. And so we thought this was a good time to visit this and see what direction council would like to go on it. So I hope everyone got to read the material that was provided. And just as a quick summary, our city 38 years ago in 1984 took on the task of already creating lodging tax before maybe it came from here, I'm not quite sure, but we spent a lot of time looking through some old meeting minutes, and we had some council members that had some pretty good foresight to start food planning. And one of the things they did was in 1991 to help create and promote tourism was to take 75% of the business license revenues and put that into tourism. And we've continued to do that all along. At some point in time, we have still not been able to find, there was a tourism fund advisory committee that was created. We're not quite sure if it maybe came out of the museum group or there was at one time an economic development group, but at some point in time, this TFAC group was started, and the TFAC group would receive information from different entities wanting to have some of the lodging tax money, and it would be presented to council and council would award it. Well, in 2000, the state of Washington came up with a whole lodging tax platform, which made it so that the council could only receive lodging tax recommendations from the LTAC board. However, we still kept our TFAC board. So we had this separate TFAC board that was at one time 11 members, and then we had our 5-member LTAC board. And through the years, different organizations have come and they've gone. We've had different people, business owners, and it's been very difficult to get a quorum of each. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, Heidi, she's just going to jump in and correct me if I say anything wrong, but the group kind of morphed together, but they still were separate, but yet they were still meeting together. And because the council can only receive input or recommendations from the LTAC board, and we have a hard time getting folks to participate on that board in general, the staff would like to just dissolve the TFAC board altogether and just focus on what's required by state law, which is We have two hotels, and that's the minimum we can have in tax anyways. Mm-hmm. So we have two hotels, so we need to have two representatives from the hotel, and then two of the entities that are the receiving of that money, and then a council member serves as the chair of that board. We have the El Corral and the O'Connell Lodge. We're not certain if the El Corral is going to want to participate. And did you receive information back from MRC today?
Yes. And my question to them was that for LTAC, we have to have five members. Are we required to have five members present in order to conduct the review process? And I was told that you only have to have three present for a quorum. There was a question between the two of us, and so MRSC was the decider. Mm-hmm. And so three members can participate for LTAC to do the review process and then come before council with their recommendation for use of tourism dollars.
But I remember that back in the day, because the position for the council is the mayor. And I remember back in the day, we tried to get El Corral to be a part of it, and they would never be a part of this. So would you force them to be a part of this just because they're a motel or whatever? Because
they do collect the tax. Right. I did.
No, but I meant for them to participate, because I mean, to come and be present for the meetings, because they never came for the meetings.
That's why we ask if we could have three, right?
Right.
So we don't care if they come to the meeting or not, as long as they're collecting the tax.
So council has to appoint the El Corral and the O'Connell Lodge as the hotels.
Okay.
And then appoint two of the receiving entities. Mm-hmm. And you do have to, at the beginning of the year, we do our council committees, we'll just review that list. Yep, this is still good, and this is the council person. But only three of the five have to attend. So if it turns out that it's the two receiving entities and a council person, then we're okay. Because it doesn't say you have to have one of here, and a council member. It's just three. But you do have to appoint them.
Yeah,
so on the record, we could do that.
Okay.
So the next item is regarding the business license revenue, and it's just to revisit again a 31-year-old decision that was made. Does council still want to divert those funds to tourism? I did include a worksheet that shows the dollar amounts that we've been receiving since 2009 to current of hotel motel tax, and then the dollar amounts for business licenses. And as we can see, the majority of the money now is business license versus the hotel motel tax. And then at the bottom, it shows the primary use of the hotel motel tax is in the shaded in the pink, and the primary receiver is the chamber. You know, of course, being, you know, finance, I want all the money. So I would say, okay, staff, let's put 100% of all the business license back into the general fund so we can use that for general fund services, which, you know, police, fire, parks, swimming pool, so on and so forth. But it also does, you know, it does create, you know, the difficulty in, you know, we're estimating, we're budgeting $4,500 in lodging tax money for 2022. So that's, you know, the LTAC would need to decide how are we going to spend $4,500 and where's that money going to go? So the chamber could be greatly impacted by that. Council can also, you know, we can change that. It doesn't have to be 75, maybe it's 25, maybe it's 50%. So it's just a discussion for council to have to decide, do you want to just leave it the way that it is? Is it something to look at that we do want to start putting that money back into the general fund for general fund services, or maybe start doing it incrementally so it's less each year, or how would council like to
proceed? Well, Heidi, you were here and you remember I said it's time to end it. It's time to put that money back in the general. And that was before you said anything. Remember, and they were there. Everybody else was present when I said, you guys, the money just isn't coming in and we're not really doing a service here. You're actually more like cutting through it all the time. So to me, and I said it then, was I think the money needs to go into a general account because we are needing more money for police, more money for parks and recs. At that time it was parks and recs, more money for fire. And I said, and we're going to get to a point where we're not going to have the money for those areas and we're going to have to take it anyway. So, and that was back, 6-7 years ago that I said we need to just, and I said at that time, why do incremental when they know it's coming? Just do it now and let them know it's coming and they can look elsewhere for whatever it is that they're going to be needing instead of dragging them along every year and keep cutting them and cutting them. Sometimes you just have to go with that. That was my opinion. You were there.
Anyway, because 2021, we did no RFP for tourism at all. And then 2022, we didn't do anything for that. So we're always a year ahead. So for 2021, it was in 2020. So we were in lockdown, basically. And then for 2021, we were still unaware of what was going to happen. So nothing has happened for 2 years for those different nonprofits that have been requesting funding.
And so we do have right now, there is $73,000 in the tourism fund.
So, but I thought I had captured there that some of that money is used for the murals. No, mm-mm. None of that money.
Right, is used for them. Right now on the worksheet that we have, the recipients have been the Toppenish Chamber of Commerce. And up until 2014, it was the Toppenish Western Art Association has been a consistent recipient. The Central Washington Junior Livestock, their last allotment was in 2017. And then the Yakima Valley Visitors, they've been a consistent recipient from 2012 to 2020. And when we reduced our award in 2019, or was it 2018, Heidi?
For who?
For the Yakima Valley Visitor Center. When we reduced it, we lost our membership. So now we pay for the membership separately out of the general fund. So that's a separate amount. We can have advertisement in that.
I guess my biggest problem with this is like, what does the Toppenish Chamber do for Toppenish and the businesses? What does the Visitors and Convention Bureau do for Toppenish other than print maps and maybe help out our Google clicks? Like what is it that they're providing for our city?
You want to do the Yakima Valley?
The whole intent for the tourism fund was for publication, advertising, get the word out about Toppenish, the events that are available. The chamber is in charge of that. And then Yakima Valley Tourism has a printed book as well as digital book that the city provides funding for that to have the events in there as well. And that's what they do for providing the service.
Well, the chamber also holds events. I mean, they sponsor the 4th of July parade. They do the lighted Christmas parade. They bring all the businesses together to deal with tourism. So, I mean, yeah, there are things that they do for the community. To bring tourism into town because that brings money into our community.
They do, and they put together the ranch dinner. They're very instrumental in that part. So they do, I mean, they do perform a community service that does bring people into the community.
And the whole thing is heads and beds, right? To bring people to town to stay in the hotels. And then that generates the lodging tax. So that's where the whole idea is. What is the lodging tax? What's the reason we have it? And what's the purpose? It's to bring heads and beds, to bring them to your community, to buy at the stores, go to the events.
But now the heads are going to put their heads on the beds in Legends. That's where they're going. I mean, correct. To be honest with you, that's where they're going.
Yes, that's
because they're, I mean, the only people that you see here are like the ones that are driving through and it's already 2 or 3 in the morning. They're so tired. They don't know about Legends yet. And that's where they end up going. But they tend to go to Legends. We lost a lot of money when they opened up their hotel.
And then the other hotel was purchased. So that was another hit to the tourism lodging tax.
So you mentioned like really important events, the only events that happen in Toppenish. So if we were to end this, how would this be carried on?
How would the
parade be, the parades, mm-hmm. how would those be carried on? Whose responsibility would it be? How would it be organized and financed?
Well, I think the only place that could take it on would either be a combination of the city, Farm Workers Clinic, but primarily with the city.
So if it's still our if the city's responsibility, but it's not the city's responsibility at this time?
Well, the city would be the one that would need to coordinate it. Okay. I mean, it is a big undertaking mm-hmm. to put that together.
Well, the ranch party, same thing.
Right.
I mean, you're talking,
right.
you're talking a couple people right. full time for, right. for quite a while, and you're doing the same thing with the parade, doing the same thing with the junior livestock show. Mm-hmm. I've seen Annie Oakley showed them, but to take this weekend and welcome them. I mean, we're not talking something where we have people volunteer for a week or two to put these things together. You're talking some full-time employees, and that's normally where the money goes. So the question is the money in. So now what do? Do we move it to the general fund and put the bill ourselves?
And one of
but the organization of it
right.
is what's going to kill. We don't have a Parks and Rec, say, person to work 3 months out of the year to put the parade together and light a parade, and then somebody else to work a couple months for the ranch party, as an example.
Right. And we did, with the change into the activities coordinator, the goal of that was to be able to provide more in-kind help with those organizations.
Right.
So, you know, that's, you know, we can't give money to do the ranch dinner, but we can do in-kind with people. We can have people help. We can have people help with the parade. And, you know, that's kind of where that position comes into play that can help with that. Yeah. But to take on the parade, it's, you know, by itself would be, we would need help from other agencies to help with that.
Well, and we're already financially supporting those things. I mean, as an example, the parade, we have people working that weekend that would normally not be working in public works, as an example. But the organization of it prior to that is, you're talking a lot of hours.
And lots of voluntolds.
Yeah.
Well, I don't personally like the idea of just cutting the funding. I think that they have there's a balance there right now. You said right of $73,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that in the long run, if we cut the funding, then we're going to have absolutely nobody coming to Toppenish for anything. And I would rather not have that.
I think I need to
have people, because if they wouldn't have the parade, or if we take on that responsibility, it's going to be a greater responsibility for the city versus the chamber taking care of that, or even the junior livestock show.
But the junior livestock show is funded by their own money. No, they advertise their own stuff. I mean, look at how much we give them. We don't give them very much, and we haven't given them any for a long time, and they're still running.
And you know, actually, I was talking to some of the organizers over the weekend about that with COVID and stuff, they had really taken a hit. So they're hoping to get things back to the glory days that it was when there was no parking available during that week when they were here.
But just remember, it wasn't that much money that we were giving them. The majority of the money was actually going to the chamber.
Right.
But I still believe that we're still getting people coming in because you've got other events coming in. Hopefully, if the pool's up and running, you've got the pool, the swimming meets coming in. You also have all this other stuff coming in with the sports events because you have that new gym. You still have some people that are coming in, even though they go to Legends, they still come over here for whatever. I mean, I still think people are coming in. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, for these people that do come in, like for these activities, like the lighted parade, mm-hmm. how many of them actually come and spend money here? Or they just come for the lighted parade and then leave? Same thing with the road, with the 4th of July parade that sometimes now is no longer on the 4th of July parade. I mean, how many people come back in the day? It was great because we had a carnival, you know, with all the little kids and they would go over there and have fun. So their money was still coming, but you don't really have that. All you have is the rodeo. So the people that are coming to see the parade, are they staying to go to the rodeo or they just come in, check it out and leave? Well, I mean, I don't know if you guys have been around, but as soon as that parade is done, poof, it was like cockroaches when they turn on the lights. Those are what, there was nobody left. I mean, think about it. I mean, because I've been around and once those parades are done, everybody's gone. Where did they go? Your restaurants aren't full. Your stores are, these guys usually aren't open. But if they were, there's nobody there except for the local people. They're doing their shopping. So I think we really need to think about it. I mean, who is staying after these events? Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand that ranch party has been a tradition for what, 100 years? It's going to be 100 years.
101, actually, but we missed one.
Yeah. We missed one. Okay, so, but I mean, again, when people come to the ranch party, are they actually spending money here? I mean, yeah, they paid for the dinner at the ranch party, but are they spending money here? Now, it's different if you talk about the was it a toy train Christmas. Now, then they do come in and they spend money there. But other than that, I don't know. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, you're saying these are great events, but are people really spending money here? Or they just come and watch and leave? Check that out next time. So, I mean.
No, I agree that people leave. I think it comes down to we don't have a really nice hotel where people are going to stay in those heads and beds. I don't think people are going to want to stay here.
And I'm wondering too, how much money we have, $73,000 in this account, because we haven't given any out for how many years, but we start looking how much money has been coming in. Because again, most of the people, they don't stay in these hotels. They stay at Legends. So how much money is coming in every year off of that? That would be my question to you. I mean, did we get that? I didn't see that. How much money is coming Legends? No, how much money is coming in from the hotels?
We haven't given any money out right, for 2 years.
Right so. Now, to date, we have 7,100.
No, no, but I mean, right. So what I'm saying is when they collect the tax at the hotel, how much money are they collecting per year?
That contributes to that.
What? How much money did you have in the account 2 years ago when you stopped giving money out? And that'll tell you how much came in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So do you know that?
Well, I do know because I have on the spreadsheet, it shows how much money we received mm-hmm. in 2018, 2019, 2020.
So for the record, if you that's what I'm waiting for you to say it for the record.
What do you have there, Debbie?
We have in 2018, we received 32,000. In 2019, 26,665. 2020 was 13,617. And year to date is 7,000.
Okay. So at least 20,000 a year, with the exception of that of the previous, I think you said 1 year was 13,000.
Was it 2021 was 13? Uh-huh. 2021 was almost 12. Uh-huh. And now we're down to 7, so maybe you'll get up to 14.
In 2009, we were 44,900.
Mm-hmm.
That was the highest one.
That was our highest one.
Get to remember back then, we had 3 motels.
Yeah.
And in 2016, we had 42,000.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been going down and down and down. Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem putting money into the general budget, almost to the point where it doesn't matter where it's at. You know, I mean, if we need to spend it, we need to spend it. That's a line item issue.
Yeah.
the situation you're dealing with is, once you do away with TFAC, which we can do, is how are you going to use that money? Are you still going to maybe contract to the chamber for a month to say, hey, would you guys put organize the 4th of July parade for X amount of dollars? You know, I mean, that's how you can do it. Or, hey, we got a ranch party. Would you guys organize that? And this is what we're willing to pay. It doesn't really matter whether the money's in the general budget or the or earmarked TFAC.
Well, the lodging tax funds are required to be processed through the lodging tax committee. So we would still have to go through that same process.
Yeah, but I mean, you can without giving a yearly stipend like we have been. You can still accomplish those things, but you can accomplish it to, you know, in different ways. It's again, it's a line item issue.
Well, yeah, I mean, we would have to in order to give that money out, we would have LTAC.
Right.
They would meet, they would receive their applications just as normal. And we, you know, for 2023, we're estimating $12,000.
Yeah.
How do we want to spend that $12,000?
And instead of saying, Chamber, we're going to give you $30,000 for the year, we're going to contract a couple things for you, $1,000 here and $1,000 there, and move on. So,
and that would just be out of the general fund, separate from LTAC.
That's good. What I just don't want is for them to say, no, we're not doing it.
Well, I mean,
I don't want to see the 4th of July parade disappear.
Yeah.
I absolutely do not want to see that disappear.
But you can get a planner for this.
I'm just saying, I'm just putting out thoughts out there because that is a possibility that there's just like, I don't want,
Yeah, Chamber could say, no, we don't have time to mess with it.
And and so we would still be looking at some costs.
Right.
And I just organizing community events, it's not something that can just be done in a week. It's usually, you know, you want to get stuff out months ahead of time, especially when it's a community-wide level.
And because we do have $73,000 in that account, and we still have the rest of the year for hotel motel tax, I mean, based on what LTAC has recommended to the council to use that money for, there is a couple years of that one recipient receiving, if that's the way LTAC were to continue to do that. So we're done today. It would be, you know, in a couple years.
So a while ago, I had sent Lance some information from the state of Washington tourism, and then I forwarded it to you. Would this impede us from trying to do like a tourism plan regionally or try to figure out how?
No, because all cities have this. All cities who have two or more hotels utilize this lodging tax money. And we did actually, contact that.
John Cooper, I spoke with him.
Yeah.
And we're waiting until he's ready to go forward. He wants to see how the first phase of this new program runs out, because there's anticipation they're going to be modifying it because it's so convoluted and there's so many details in there. And so he's hoping for them to revise it so that it's easier. And he is aware that the city is very interested in participating with them, and they are the experts. There are county representatives. So he is aware that we want to be involved in that.
Well,
there's
a prime example of where the money was going when we were getting big money. That's why we paid Yakima Tourism the money we did. We were part of the organization. In fact, the city sat on their executive board. So we had representation. So when things like this came out of Olympia, it was an automatic. It wasn't something, hey, could you do this for us? Mm-hmm. It was done. We were part of a statewide tourism.
The research that Debbie and I have been doing for the last week, 86 through 90, I got that far in minutes, and the city had been partnering with Yakima Valley Convention Bureau, which is now Yakima Valley Tourism, for tourism promotion. So the city's had a long-standing relationship with them.
So we're just having a conversation, are you looking for action?
So, well, I would like, I did have a couple recommendations and I did add one on here. The first one would be to update the TMC to remove the TFAC board. And then also we do need to update the TMC to reflect the 2016 RCW for LTAC. And so up until 2016, when LTAC presented their recommendation to the council had to accept the amounts and the people that were the organizations that were presented. So there was, you know, five categories, and each one was going to get $100. Mm-hmm. So the council would have to do those five for those dollar amounts. Well, in 2016, I'm sorry, they could pick three, but it still had to be the $100. Mm-hmm. In 2016, it changed where the council could come back and say, no, we don't want to do five at $500. We're going to do one for $500. Mm-hmm. But you have to bring it back to LTAC and they have to review that. And there's a 45-day review period until there's a final decision made on it. So we want to update that section of the code so that it follows along with the RCW that changed in 2016. So those are the two things that we'd like to bring back at the next council meeting with an ordinance to update the code. And then if council wants to continue having discussions on the business license revenues, leave it the way that it is, put it back to the general fund. That is what I'm looking for direction from council on tonight. On how, what would you like to do with that? And I do happen to have, so we budgeted this year for business license revenue, $42,000. So we budgeted $10,000 in the general fund and $32,000 in hotel or tourism. So if we said we're going to take 10%, of course, that would be $10,500. If we were going to do 50%, it would be $21,000. And then, of course, then the 75% is $31,000. So if we, council decided, let's just do 50%, we would gain 25%, and there'd still be $21,000 going in.
How much did you budget for businesses again?
$42,000.
And for hotel and tourism?
Well, it's $42,000 total.
Total.
So we have $10,000 going into general fund and $32,000 going into tourism. Sure. And that we budgeted because we were not sure what was going to be going on with COVID, mm-hmm. how long we were going to be, you know, not traveling.
Well, we've got a couple different issues. You know, one of them that we probably can take care of tonight fairly easy is, do we do away with TFAC and combine it and clean it up? We're not dealing with any of the money or anything else. We're just making that decision. You know, that we should be able to handle.
Yeah.
And then maybe people need to think about the money issue. I think the 50% is probably good. And then next year we can make it 25 and,
yeah,
you know, or like Claire says, you can jerk the bandage off, whatever you want to do.
But only because you haven't done for 2 years. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
but we still have those. We now have those functions coming up that we haven't had for those 2 years either.
Right. But then you came up with a great idea, too, that we go ahead and hire someone else to do those.
Yeah.
Line item.
That's all I'm saying is tonight we should be able to make the decision on the TFAC, and maybe somebody needs to think a little more about the money.
So are you wanting a motion? Because I know that you said staff recommends updating the Toppenish Municipal Code to remove a 2.30.150 membership of the Tourism Fund Advisory Committee and base it on that. So that would be one motion that you want, right?
And well, that would just, yes, we would just bring an ordinance to the next meeting to update that. Okay.
So do you need a motion for that today, or are you just going to bring it, you're just going to bring it on Monday?
Bring it on Monday.
Okay, good, okay. Bring it on Monday. Yeah. Okay. So that was easy, yeah. On that one, okay. And the next one that you want is us to...
Money? That is where it's direction on what would you like me to bring to next council meeting on the business license, or do we just want to
revert? Dollar-wise, you know, 75% or...
You want to revert 50 or divert 50% to tourism, 50, keep 50 in general fund, put 50 into tourism, put 100% into general fund, zero into tourism.
Well, it sounds to me right now that people here are not ready for the 100% cutoff time. I was more into, like he was saying, I would be willing this year to go ahead, like I would make a motion that this year we go ahead and give them 50% and the other 50 in general. Next year, we give them 25%, the other 75% goes to general. And then the third year, it all goes 100% to general. That would be my motion. If anyone's willing to second it, we can move on.
And then we would bring a motion or an ordinance back for council to approve, because this is our code.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
So you can draw that up for the next meeting.
Yeah.
50, 25, 0.
Yeah.
Do you need a motion for that, or do you just need...